So here's our first movie. It's two males from a borough in New York City. Mm-hmm. Highly attractive, both minorities, yeah. Both children of immigrants. They get a show off of their podcast. Mm-hmm. And then they just spend the money that they get from the company that produces their show.
I don't hate this idea.
Hello, and welcome to The Last Laugh. I'm Matt Wilstein from The Daily Beast. This week on the show, we have two of the newest late-night hosts on the scene, Desus Nice and The Kid Mero. Before they started hosting Desus and Mero on Showtime, they had similar shows on Complex and Viceland. They also have a great podcast called The Bodega Boys. The Showtime show has really taken what they do best to the next level. They started out in February with an interview with AOC on their very first episode. They've also interviewed 2020 candidates like Kirsten Gillibrand, Cory Booker, and Pete Buttigieg, and they tell me that they are planning to host a lot more this fall. This is our first episode with two guests, which was a lot of fun to do, and keep listening for a crazy story about how an appearance on Jimmy Fallon's show led to a Twitter feud with Taylor Swift fans. I think you'll really enjoy that. So here we go. Let's get to my interview with Desus and Mero. But yeah, welcome to LA. How are you enjoying it so far? When did you get in?
We got in on Friday night.
Friday night.
It's been very chill, you know.
Everything's a blur, man.
A couple of deer antler shots.
Yeah.
Shoplifting in Erewhon.
You know what I'm saying?
Now, actually, we've been to LA a couple of times, but we're still New Yorkers. So, like dummies, we've been walking everywhere. Mm-hmm. And we're staying in West Hollywood, so we've been walking up those hills with the steep incline.
You look real weird if you're walking around LA.
With shopping bags. Their cars are looking at us, and it's like, they're like, is that Desus and Mero?
Are they poor now? With them?
Did they lose their show?
Yeah, I moved from New York like 7-8 years ago, and I would walk a lot too, and people would give me weird looks.
It's like you're an alien. Like, what's wrong with that?
Also, if you jaywalk, they're just like, what do I do now?
Whoa!
It's like a deer ran into the road.
Whoa, I don't know what to do. Do I break?
You can't do that thing where you kind of inch out on the crosswalk.
They will clip you. That's no on good. Purpose.
So you guys were here for, I'm sure, a few different things, but you hosted the TCA Awards this weekend.
Right.
What was that like?
It was cool. You know, the Teen Choice Awards, Nickelodeon, you know.
A lot of gack.
JoJo Silva was there. Like, guys!
Yeah,
Mero, no more show.
Exactly, cool.
Is that what you thought you were getting into?
Yes, we brought Mad Slime. No, the TCAs was really cool because, you know, like, it's the Critics Association. It's like... Every time we've been told about the TCAs, we're like, expect a dry room, expect no one's going to laugh. But every time we've gone to TCAs, we've had a wonderful experience.
Oh,
the room
good.
Has loved us. So it was a continuation of that. And it was so wild coming out and just seeing like famous people. They were like just happy to see us and smiling. Mm-hmm. Like Amy Poehler is like cheering on every joke. And
throw me a honey bun!
It was just so much fun, man.
Yeah, did you guys have any good celebrity interactions? Anything that really sticks out?
Karamo from Queer Guy lost his shit when he saw us.
He's like, I love you guys.
I fucking love you guys. I'm like, we love you.
We hugged.
Fred Armisen
from SNL. Yeah,
yeah, shout to him.
Comedy legend. He's like, I love you guys' stuff. And you're just still like, you know we exist.
That's
wild.
Awesome.
It's so much fun, man.
You guys, this was your first award show hosting experience, think, right?
It was not televised.
Yeah.
Was that good or you should have been televised?
It was good.
It was a good for, you know, it was a good dry run. When we're eventually hosting, like, you know.
The Source Awards.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Is that number one on the list?
Number one on the
list. Bring it back to Soul Train Awards.
Yeah. I don't think they left.
we're continuing them.
They just have them on like Wednesday at 3 p.m. now.
We're going to do that.
Yeah. Well, maybe you guys can do the Oscars because I know nobody wants to do that.
You don't get a lot of love for it. You just get like, no matter how good a job you do, people on Twitter are like, this is terrible.
You could crush it and people will still be like, meh.
This is terrible. Yeah. So, I think it might, maybe because if we go in there, we're just not going to care anyway. And also, I can't pronounce anyone's names properly, so it'd be a lot of fun. Like, people come up on stage and stuff.
He'd be like, yo.
Get up for Jessica Adams. They're like, you mean Amy Adams? I was like, close enough.
Cool.
She got red hair, you know, whatever.
You guys are off for the month of August, right? Mm-hmm. More or less.
Off from the show.
Not from life.
Deep. But does it feel good to have a little break? I mean, you've been going pretty nonstop with the Showtime show for what, like 6 months now?
You know, it feels good to have a break, but at the same time, it's like, it's not really a break because we're still doing a podcast. We're doing a live tour and everything. And also, it's not really a grind. We really like what we do.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, we're doing it 24/7 all the time. So it feels like a break. And yes, you know, like, he has to spend time with his family. I eventually probably to wash the dishes in my my apartment. But, you know, it feels good to have a little break, but we're itching at the bit, ready to get back at it.
Yeah, yeah. What do you feel like, I mean, it's been about 6 months of this show on Showtime. What do you feel like you've, learned so far about how to do this specific show? Because it is a little different from what you guys have done before.
Just adapting to, like, a bigger machine.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Just and the ins and outs of that and just learning that. But other than that, it's just been like, you know, we know what we bring to the table.
Yeah.
And they just put the resources behind us and, like, kind of, like, elevate that. You know what I mean?
Showtime is like, it's a union show, so there's a lot more people, a lot more moving parts, a much bigger studio space. So it's not really, it's more behind the scenes stuff that other people have to handle. But at the end of the day, it's like muscle memory. You just sit in the chairs and start riffing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, what is a typical show taping day like for you guys? Can you kind of walk through what it's like?
Cars pick us up.
Yeah, cars pick us up, bring us into hair and makeup. We get, you know, free haircuts, which is like,
that's the only reason we do this. Like, it's not
number
about
one reason.
Is
yeah,
that twice a week now that you're twice a week?
Twice a week.
Two haircuts a week.
Two haircuts
that's
a week.
Pretty good.
That's two guys with no hair. It's very impressive.
Very impressive.
You gotta get the beards shaped.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? And then, you know, like, we come in, they come in, they like, oh, here's the script for today. We throw it over our shoulders. Don't look at it. And they're just like, we worked on that. And then I drink a beer. He has some Brugal. We sit down. We start, you know, we warm up with the audience. Yeah. Ask them. You know,
we're our own warm up comedian.
Yeah.
Which is,
yeah. And you guys put the warm-ups on YouTube, too.
Yeah.
Right?
And it's like people find that so weird because they're just like, usually comedians have to save their material and then you can't just like go out there and blow your wad, as they say. But we're just out there and the audience is very intimate because the audience is right there. So you're having actual personal conversation. Like, I'll be like, who's skipping work today? And someone right here will be like, yo, I am. And I'll be like, call your boss. And like, you're just, it's really intimate. And that warm-up, that warms the crowd up because, you know, like, people might have been to a TV taping before, so they have kind of a preconceived notion. And our show is a lot more like, yo, if you want to yell out something, you can yell out something. Like, jokes. It's a wild show. It's an interactive experience.
A lot of these show tapings can be kind of tense because they like have the audience all like waiting a long time.
Right, it's a lot of hurry up and wait.
And you have to like applaud on command, and you have people screaming at you.
Yeah, we have
and that's what
that.
I was gonna say. It's like there's still like an iota of that in there to keep the train on the rails.
Yeah,
but like the other shows like herd in the audience. It's just like this weird, like you go this way. Do not contact them.
Give us your phones. Yeah, you're not getting any water. You can't go to the bathroom.
Yeah, you have to stay in your seat for like 3 hours.
For 4 hours. Yeah. And they're coming. No, they're not. Wait another half an hour.
And we definitely, we've been there. And so we wanted our show to be the polar opposite of that. So the studio audience could take pictures. They don't lose their phones.
We're like,
listen, you're going to be here for an hour and a half, no longer than that. Like, we're getting you in. We're getting you out. Like, because you want the audience to have the same energy and still be happy to be there. Because I've been to tapings of shows before, and after that fourth hour there without food, you're a little more hostile to the comics. Mm-hmm. You're not laughing as hard as the jokes. So we definitely want to always try to keep the audience happy.
Yeah, I mean, you guys talked about, you know, throwing the script over your shoulder, but it does feel like, compared to most late night shows, it's a lot more improvised and off the cuff.
But we don't see the videos ahead of time.
Yeah.
So the script is basically like, and also they don't want us to know what's in the video. So the script is basically like a throw to a video, and the script might not necessarily say what the video is going to be.
It never does. It'll just say like horse in Nepal. And you're like, okay, what's the end? Nothing. And then you react to the video in real time. And that's when you get like a real authentic
reaction
to the clip or whatever it is. Whatever.
You guys do have a lot of writers though. So what are they doing?
Oh, they work on like the sketches.
and like the parody commercials, stuff like field pieces and things like that.
Like, we don't like, because we do so much off the top of our head that it's just like, boom, like we could do whatever. But the days that we're not in the studio, they're working on sketches, they're working on like stuff to do with guests, because you know, you could do a regular interview, but then to do something like what we did with John Legend, where we had him singing about eating butt, like, you know, that's a little, you know, need some writers for that.
Yeah.
I think I have an idea for you. Think like Barry White.
Yeah.
Take me to your chocolate galaxy.
That's the
only place that I wanna be.
It's kind of hitting.
Fellas, if you wanna blow your lady mind, if you wanna get ahead, eat it from behind. Chocolate galaxy.
I loved the last episode that you guys did before your break with Anderson Cooper and Andy Cohen. That felt like it really kind of
you reached a new heights with that one. Just
that was a good one.
The dynamic between all four of you and kind of finding the parallels between them and you guys. Yeah. Did that feel special?
It did.
It was fun. It was fun, and because we had met Andy Cohen. We were on Watch What Happens Live.
Oh yeah,
we've had dinner with him. Like, so we know Andy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Anderson was like the variable.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And he's a very serious journalist. Yeah. You know what I mean? So it's like,
or at least he seems like he is. Yeah, but then sometimes he lets something else out.
Yeah,
right.
You saw it during the interview. Yeah, like,
and then he let his hair down in the interview, and I was like, I like this.
And then also, like, if you notice, that was our longest aired interview so far this season because it was so good.
Yeah, it was more than 20 minutes. Right?
Yeah, the energy they had. Like, one of the comments was like, you guys should replace The View with this. I was like, I'm not mad at that. I'd watch that.
Yeah. You
but guys it was can a, have your, CBS, own, your own version of The View.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I'll be the Meghan McCain.
I'll be Whoopi.
So this is really the third version of the TV show, right? I mean, but there was Complex, mm-hmm. and then there was Viceland, mm-hmm. and now there's this one. I mean, you guys have hinted a little bit that there was some stuff about the Viceland experience that you didn't love. So what is the kind of real story there in terms of what happened, why you left, why Showtime was so much more of
appealing? It wasn't really, it was like the contract was up.
Yeah. It was like sports. It's like free agency. Yeah. Like, you have suitors. People are like giving you offers. And then you sit down with your team and you discuss like what's the best place for us? What's the best fit, like content-wise? Yeah. Like, what do we want to do, you know what I mean, that we will be allowed to do by X Studio X or like
and also like X, which deal will allow us to work on other stuff, because we have the live tour, we have the podcast, we have a book coming out next year. So it's very important that we had to put ourselves in a situation we would have enough time to do other things.
Yeah,
and Showtime definitely offered that.
And did Vice like prevent you from doing some of that stuff, or were there parts of it that you didn't like? Or
no,
what?
It wasn't that. It was just as the Viceland show went, you know, like we rose up, and then there were more demands. So it was like, you know, like you have to switch up your time, because we had a lot more free time when we first started on Vice than we did at the end.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then when you went to Showtime, that's a totally different audience in a lot of ways. Did you feel pressure to kind of tailor your show to this Showtime audience?
Absolutely not.
Because the whole reason we're here is because we never did that.
Yeah. Right.
We started off, you know, we self-censor in a way, because we don't want to, like, we're humans and we're learning with everybody else. So it's like starting from Complex, where we were just like two dudes from the Bronx, like, and then just having that path to Showtime, you learn a lot along the way. You know what I mean? So it's just like, we're still us. Nothing has changed. We've just matured slightly. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's pretty much it.
I mean, we know what we bring to the table, and we also knew that our fans were going to follow us regardless. Like, all our fans were like, just say the word. Whatever channel you're going to, we're following you there. Yeah. We know
Showtime wasn't a hurdle for that, you think?
Not at all. No. People were just like, yo, it's no. Like, we actually had a discount code that they could use to get a lower price, but a lot of them were like, we already have Showtime. As soon as you announced it, we signed up for Showtime. So it wasn't a matter of tuning ourselves to the channel. It was more like, couldn't the viewers of Showtime, are they going to come around and watch? Are they going to understand it? And there was a fear of that from Showtime's side. Yeah. But it's just like, fam, it just rolls in. People watch Billions, and then we come on after, and they're like, what the hell is this? And then after 5 minutes, they're like,
oh, it's delicious.
I love this. I love it. Like, they're watching City on a Hill, and then we come on, and they're like, yo, I have no, because they see the commercial, and if you have no idea who we are, it's like, what the hell is some hip-hop crap? But I think one of the stats that came out was, like, we actually lowered the actual demographic age of Showtime's viewers with our show, because they responded to it like, this is a very antiquated term, like hotcakes. But, you know, like, they came in, and we didn't have to change anything. It was just Showtime was like, yo, be unapologetically Bronx. And if you build it, they'll come.
Do you think about it all when you're putting the show together, whether people are going to watch it on TV or YouTube? And does that, you know, change how you kind of think about it?
We just do what we do. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it's like, whatever format you enjoy it in, enjoy it. Mm-hmm. And
it's like Obamacare. You can keep your doctor. Whatever way you watch our show, you can continue to watch the show that way. And also being on Showtime, it's just like, that was the difference between Vice and Showtime. Like, we only could say the F word 5 times on Vice.
So that's a big difference.
Showtime is like, yo, you want to show nipples? Do it.
You want to pull your balls out in the middle of the show? Whatever. Go for it.
Yeah. I remember when John Oliver started, he really took advantage of the HBO stuff. He was like showing dicks and showing like all this stuff. So, I mean, are there examples of how you've taken advantage of what Showtime has allowed you to do?
There's definitely some jokes that are just like, like we, because you know, there's a show you record, then they edit it, and then there's a show that comes out at night, and we don't see it until it airs. And sometimes there's some jokes, and I'm just like, how did that air?
There was a foot fetish, sex toy.
That was a lot. Mm.
That was a foot with a built-in vagina, and I did a shot out of it. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know what other network.
Hopefully, it wasn't
used. No, it was brand new. No, it was brand new. Like, we saw
Made sure it came out of the box.
And the funny, like the powder on it.
And the funniest thing from that segment, there was still some parts of that segment that was too problematic to air.
Yeah.
So they took that part of him doing the. They was like, that's the least problematic of the segment. So.
What got cut? So people know.
Some spitting. maybe. Maybe some finger action.
So speaking of John Oliver, you guys brought on one of his writers, Josh Gondelman.
Shout out to Josh.
Josh Gondelman.
You
have,
Josh
you have Heben Nagatu from Colbert. So you kind of brought some of these people in from these other shows.
Yeah.
What did you kind of see in them that you wanted to bring to your show? And do you feel like any of those shows have kind of rubbed off on you guys?
Well, we never went poaching like, yo, this person's on this show, I want them.
They're
like,
the best person on this show. Well, let's take them. They're the best. It wasn't like that. Because
we've been following Josh on Twitter for years. Mm-hmm. And like, I've always respected what he did. I'm good close friends with Heben. Like, we go to brunch all the time. Like, everyone on the show is either someone we know personally or is just like someone recommended. It was never like, Who's this guy for John Oliver? And I mean, like, these people are super talented.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess, I don't know if they weren't happy at the other place or, like, they just wanted to work with us. But, I mean, they're all a gift to have.
It must be really different for them, you know, different experience. And so, what do you feel like you've learned maybe from each of them, from Josh and from Heben, just about making a show?
Just their comedy stylings and how to, like, use it with our comedy stylings to make the best product together. Because we, you know, like, no one sees eye to eye on a certain joke. So they might come at a joke a certain way, and we come at it a different way. And then we have to work together to get that sweet middle spot where it works. But now, like, we've done the show so many times, like, now it's, like, effortless. Like, now the writers get us. We get it. Like, we're cracking up in the writers' room, and, like, the jokes are getting dirtier and dirtier. And, like, we learned how to work with each other, because before we never had writers, and before they've never worked with anyone that could just come up with stuff off the top of their dome. So it was, like, a little learning process, but it's worked out now. Now it's, like, peanut butter and chocolate.
And it's, like, you get different perspectives. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's the most important thing. It's like, we'll sit at a creative meeting or a table read or whatever, and we'll go around, and it's like, oh, I didn't think, you know, that was not that funny. You know what I mean? Or it could be a myriad of things. It could be a topic. It could be a run of jokes. It could be a sketch idea, anything. And it's just like that collaborative process. Whereas before it was just me and him.
I was lying, and I was just like, here's an exclusive for you. We only hired Josh because he's from Boston, and we want to ridicule him for being a Red Sox fan and a Celtics fan. And that's literally the only reason he's on.
I have some bad news. I grew up in Boston.
Boo. Yeah. You know what I've learned?
You moved to New York.
I'd moved to New York.
So you're a smart guy.
Yeah.
You meet people and they're secret Boston fans. You're like, wow, they're so great. Wow. You see one tweet like, go Red Sox. You're like, your heart just breaks. Wow. Like, wow.
I thought you were a good person.
Wow.
Yeah, sorry to break it to you guys.
Sorry, it's all right.
It's all right.
What is the process like of making this show in terms of the writer's room? And I'm just so fascinated by this because it does feel so different from these other shows.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, it's not, you guys are probably just doing it how you've always done it. But what is that process like of being in the writer's room and working with these writers?
Well, they pitch us. We have like pitch meetings, and they're like, we should do this, or we should do this, or this would be a good idea. And then we're just like, this sounds like a good idea this week. Work on this.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'll work out some beats, and they'll get us from, they'll be like, all right, start at point A, and then you guys do your thing, get somehow to point B.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'll come up with the little situations.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not so tightly scripted, but it's just like they have the vision. That we're just like, yo, take this vision and expand on it, make it bigger. Mm. And that's when they go to work. Like our first, I think the best example was the first parody we did of Green Book on our first episode.
Yeah.
Because that was, like, they hadn't seen Green Book. And I came in and I was like, fam, I saw Green Book and I thought it was the funniest movie ever. I was like, this shit is so over the top bad.
Yeah, you guys were ahead of the curve a little bit on the Green Book thing.
Yeah, yeah. And then they saw it and they were just like, wow, this is so ripe for parody. And then they just ran with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is you talked about, you know, having different perspectives in the writer's room and having, you know, conversations like that. Can you think of an example of when maybe you guys thought something was really funny and someone else in the writer's room was like, I don't know about that, or they were kind of disagreements or anything like that?
Not really, because like I said before, like we've matured to the point where it's like we know not to punch down comedically. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like you always punch up comedically. So there's never been like a moment in the writer's room. You know what I mean? Like we joke around, we fuck around. You know what I mean? But it's never like I'm actually offended by what you just said.
Coming up, Desus and Mero talk about why they mostly avoid Trump jokes, but want to interview every 2020 Democratic candidate. The Last Laugh is brought to you by Euphoric Hemp Oil Infused Chewing Gum. The entire CBD industry is talking about this innovative, patented hemp oil infused chewing gum. What makes Euphoric so special? Euphoric Hemp Oil Infused Chewing Gum is not your average gum. In fact, it's an innovative, patented delivery system. What makes this gum so innovative, you ask? As a chewing gum, Euphoric brings innovation to the CBD market, and then its patent delivery system is time-released, and all the action happens in the mouth. The gum's flavor and consistency make it possible to chew it longer. Chewing the hemp oil-infused gum longer increases absorption into the mouth. Compared to edibles like gummies and tinctures, even capsules, Euphoric absorption rate is about 50% greater. This is because edibles have to pass through the digestive tract, which breaks down the ingredients and drastically reduces their absorption rate. Euphoric, however, keeps the hemp oil-infused gum in the mouth longer, completely bypassing the digestive system. Euphoric is gluten-free, it's sugar-free, non-GMO, and it tastes great with long-lasting flavor. You only need to try Euphoric once to see what all the fuss is about. To prove it, a limited supply of free trials have just been released nationwide. Just visit this website, lovethisgum.com, to claim your free trial today while supplies last. Again, that website is lovethisgum.com. Lovethisgum.com. Speaking of punching up, I mean, you guys have done some Trump stuff, but I'd say you've mostly stayed away from him.
Yeah,
we mellowed on it because it's just like
it's
like
so constant,
it's saturation.
And like, not only that, it's not really funny anymore.
Yeah, you know.
Before it was like, yo, look, he's moving water. You know, look at his hair. And like now he's like, and you know, that was like the first couple of days, first month, first year of his presidency. Mm-hmm. Like now, this is normal. Like the damage being done to just democracy is going to be so long lasting that it's not funny, and it's. Like, there's certain things you can't really joke about. Like, he's locking babies up.
Like, yeah, I mean, I think people try. And sometimes they find when they're able to find a way in, it's interesting, but I think it's getting harder and harder.
It's getting harder, and it's like the viewing public is just kind of just like fatigued.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because it's like they'll find a way in that they think is a way in, and then everybody will use that same way in.
Mm-hmm. You think it was like a unique way in?
Yeah.
And then it's just like, also, you're required to do Trump. You see every other late, like we've talked to other late night hosts, and they're like, "Fam, like Trump every night. Yeah. You gotta do at least one Trump joke." And I remember when he first became president, I said at Viceland, I was like, "I feel like we're covering Trump too much," and we purposely tried to pull back, but he just kept doing such weird stuff.
Yeah, and it was at first it was like novelty, like it was like, "Wow, this is nuts! Like, is he really doing this?" And it was just like we're bystanders, just like watching this unfold, like holy shit, like. And like, you know, bringing levity to it, but in a way that was just like, but now it's like you said, like it's gotten so serious that it's just like
checks and balances doesn't even work now. You just got people just blatantly doing crimes out in the open. Mm-hmm. There's a sense of hopelessness in the American public now. And it's just like, I think now before it was just like people were coming to our show, like, and we were like, yo, look what he's doing. And now people are just coming to our show kind of like an escape. Mm-hmm. Like, yo, for half an hour,
please
take
make
my
me laugh about something else.
Yeah, for half an hour, take my mind off the dumpster fire that is America.
One thing I know you couldn't resist, you know, going after was the racist tweets about the squad. Had a bit about that. I mean, why was that something that you felt like you really
wanted to talk about? AOC's from the Bronx, you know what I'm saying? That's our homegirl, you know what I'm saying? We got to represent.
Yeah. We actually know AOC, and it's just like, it's so wild that the president is specifically tweeting about someone we know, and like we know her reaction to it. And it's just the idea that he's just picking on a private citizen and just the ridiculousness of it. And also, we had the squad on our first episode. Mm-hmm. We just went to see AOC, and they just naturally came by, and it was so nice to us.
I love that that scene that you guys in Washington. Yeah, so AOC was your first guest on the show. So how did that kind of come together?
That was like a no-brainer. That was just like, we're coming out of the gate strong, and we want to make a splash, you know what I mean? And we knew her. We had a rapport already. So it was just like,
and that wasn't even like through her campaign. That was like directly texting her, like, "Yo, come on the show." And she was like, "Say less."
We got kind of the effect that you get of the Twitter trolls and the Russian bots and the people. Yeah. When that kind of stuff happens, do you regret getting into politics or?
No. I mean, it is heavy, but in a weird way, that stuff is validation that you're doing something real, right? Because if you're just flying under the radar, just trying to, you know, get your check, like not rock the boat, then what's the point of being in politics? Mm-hmm. Like, what is the point of doing things if you're just trying to maintain a status quo that doesn't help people?
What does it mean for you to have AOC in Congress, someone who you know, someone, you know, representing the Bronx in that way, which is different than what it's been in the past? I mean, what does that mean for you?
It feels good because she reminds me of what we're doing to late night. Yeah. She's in there, she's shaking the table, she's, you know, challenging a system that already exists, challenging established rules that, and then just like, why do these rules exist? Mm-hmm. She's in there, it's like, you know, not to be corny, but she's disrupting government, and you can see like it's making some people uncomfortable. There's pushback, people are like, you know, she has to follow the rules, she has to be respectable, and it's kind of similar to the kind of feedback we get about our show, and they're like, don't do this, don't say the N-word, don't do this, and it's just like, yo, this is the future, whether you like it or not, this is the change that's going to happen, so you can either get with it or get left behind, and that's what I represent. And then that's her, she's always been that same outgoing, very gritty, very Bronx, I'm not taking no shit kind of personality. And I just love to see that.
And there's very clear parallels there between like politics and entertainment, where it's just like you have like, because she beat Joseph Crowley, which was like sitting, and he was just there forever.
Yeah.
And he was just, he assumed that, and she represents my district in the Bronx, and he just assumed, I'm a Democrat, I'm in the Bronx, I'm going to win every year. So he did absolutely nothing, and she came, beat him by landslide, and it's that those parallels that are like in entertainment, you have like these old stodgy white guys who are kind of like the gatekeepers, and it's the same thing in government. So when you have somebody who comes in, it's a young person of color who has like, hey, I have these ideas, these are my points of view, you know what I mean? And like you said, shaking the table, and kind of like I would use the word disruptive because it sounds like she's in there like throwing Molotovs in like the halls of Congress, but like she's like opening people's eyes and being like, look, this is really what's going on. Like, I'm tweeting what's actually happening.
Yeah, and kind of like, breaking the rules in terms, not like the real rules, but the rules that everyone has kind of
like
followed.
The unwritten rules, right. Like, don't run over the mound, you know what I mean? Like, that type of, like, dumb baseball unwritten rule stuff where it's just like, no, we didn't have to do that.
Yeah. How did you guys meet her in the first place, and kind of what was your first interactions?
Oh, shout out to our boy Tommy Alter, who just like knows everybody.
He literally knows everybody.
But like, we know people on her staff, and like being off from the Bronx, it was just a matter of time. Like, they were trying, we actually were trying to get her on the old show, but the show ended before we had a chance to get her on.
Yeah.
But she knew about us, she watched the show, and like, she was a big fan, so it was just like, it wasn't a matter of if, it was a matter of when. And then we just had lunch one time in the Bronx, and it was just like, off of that, it's just been cool ever since.
Yeah. You guys have also had a lot of a few presidential candidates from the Democratic side on your show. You had Cory Booker, Kirsten Gillibrand, Pete Buttigieg. Who has kind of impressed you the most so far, of the, whether it's people you've had on the show or people you want to have on the show, in terms of that, in terms of the Democratic field?
Nobody. It's too early.
It's too early. It's like those fighting games that have 48 characters, and you're like, man, I was like, I don't know who I'm going to pick. I was like, there's too many people. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's like you can't get a clear message through right now, because right now there's people are just like, oh, all this infighting is terrible. I was like, no, we need this. We need to get some of these people
that
out of the
paint. That doesn't bother you, the infighting. Yeah.
That's literally how primaries work. And it's just, people are just like, now all of a sudden everyone's like, oh, they're clutching their pearls. Like, oh, don't say, like, no, like, if this person was saying racist stuff in the 80s, bring it up. Let us know. And everyone's like, oh, if you do infighting, you're not going to be able to beat Trump. I'm like, well, you know, if that's the case, let's worry about Russian interference, voter suppression, and all this stuff. But, you know, the Democratic primaries, the way it works is last person standing. And you got to let these, sometimes you got to let, it's not, they're not attacking each other, but they're just trying to prove I am the best candidate, or I can actually beat Trump. And you have to, sometimes you got to get a little messy. And people enjoy the messiness. Like, let's be honest. People, no one's watching the debate to be like, ah, this is where I'm going to learn, I'm going to decide off of this debate thing. Like, if you're just slowly voting for a candidate based on how they performed in the debate, you're making a huge mistake. But hopefully having the people on the show is like a chance for you to get to know them. And then if you see, like, maybe you like what Cory Booker had to say. Now you can go to his website, research more. Maybe you like what Kirsten Gillibrand had to say. You go on her website. But we're never like, yo, Dee Zemmour will say vote for this person.
Yeah,
we're not doing that.
Yeah. But is there anyone that you really want to get on the show that you haven't?
Oh no, we have people scheduled to be on. I can't.
Yeah.
Can't give out the
names yet. But
Bill de Blasio is not one of them.
No. You're not excited about the Bill de Blasio candidacy?
No, you know what? The backwards pizza eating.
Yeah, the Red Sox fandom.
He tweeted out. He was like, congrats to the world champion Boston Red Sox. He tweeted that out from the mayor of New York Twitter account. Have you lost your mind, Bill de Blasio? You groundhog killer.
That was the end. That was it. What about what about Marianne Williamson? What do you guys think about her?
She's interesting. Absolutely bonkers.
She's interesting, but you know the thing is, like, I've watched enough politics that I know of these people before. Like, everyone's like, who are these people? These people, they've never been on my radar. I'm like, fam, I watch MSNBC for like 8 hours every day for the last 5 years.
Do you?
Like, you know what happened? I was dating a girl that worked in politics.
Yeah.
And I used to be like, this is so boring. Like, how do you watch this? And like, we broke up. And next thing I know, I'm like, yo, time for Hardball.
Can't stop.
Got my Chris Matthews hat on. Like, yeah, Hardball.
Give me the takes.
But yeah, so all these people, you know, they've been bubbling under the surface. And like, I know their views. I've known stuff they've done. So you're watching. It's weird to watch Twitter because people are just like, they're like, yeah, I'm voting for Marianne Wilson. And I'm like, okay, Google her. Google her views on like vaccination, on mental health and stuff. Some of these people, they seem great flash in the pan. But once you go underneath the surface, you're like, oh. Because I always say that to run for office, you either have to have a very big heart or be a sociopath. And there's no in between. And most of these people do not have big hearts.
Yeah. I want to ask about the Mayor Pete segment that you did with him, because I thought that was pretty funny. You know, I thought he was pretty game, but also seemed a little bit uncomfortable about drinking out of a paper bag and all that. What kind of vibes?
Well, the discomfort came from the fact that it was he thought it was just like a 40.
Yeah.
It was like, no, sir, this is a single malt scotch. Then he was game.
Yeah.
Oh, he liked it once he.
But I mean, also people just like, he looked uncomfortable being around two people of color. I was like, no, like, we took him to a neighborhood he's not familiar with. He doesn't really know us.
He's from South Bend, Indiana, and we took him to Dykeman, uptown.
And like a very loud block, a lot of people and stuff. We're walking around with very little security. We're walking through a park, and we're super comfortable. Like, we know the rules and stuff, but also, you know, like, he has to be careful. Like, he's running for president.
Me and Pete, we're going to close it out with a uptown tradition.
You know what it is. All right. You're out here, you're hood certified, you're uptown certified, you're with the Bodega Boys. You know, they say in New York City you're not allowed to have a thing called open containers, but apparently if you put a alcoholic beverage inside a brown bag, the cops don't see it.
They don't, and it's good.
It's kind of, you know, you're a military guy. Look. It's the fog of war.
All right.
I don't know if you want to sip around.
Come here more often.
You know, let's say, like, don't let the kids see.
Right.
Salud.
Salud. That's what you say of time.
All right.
Dale con todo, papi.
Keep it low in case cops come in. They be tripping at the end of the month, bro.
You know what I'm saying?
Quotas. I'm here at Pete, I'm 212 and enough.
We out here, you know what I'm saying? Thank me with this.
You know what it is, Bodega Boys, me and Pete in the building. I'm about to go get more hookah. But he was a good sport about everything. And what was kind of funny, we got a little blowback online because people said we were pandering. He was pandering to the black vote by drinking 40s in the park.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, first of all, that's so racist, that comment that you said, because we weren't drinking 40s. And also the idea that black people are monolithic and we're going to vote for someone just... Oh, shit, he drank a 40 in the park. Oh, shit, yeah. Nigga, yeah. Let's go. Yeah. Mayor Pete. Hey, we started, doing this swag surfing.
Swag surfing and shit. Like,
Mayor Pete's invited to the cookout. It's like, how black people vote. But he was a good sport about that. And that's the other thing. Candidates know if they come on the show, they can't dictate if it has to be an interview, because you might be like, I want my candidate on the show. I'm like, yeah, we're going to climb to the top of Mount Everest with your candidate. Are they game for that?
We're going
to
go see Green Boots.
Okay.
I mean, I think if he was trying to pander, I don't think it worked, because he still has about 0% of the black vote in a lot of these.
Exactly. And then that's the polls, people just like, he's pandering. And then the next day he had like the discussion about after the cop shooting and stuff. And I'm just like, what happened to all the pandering? Like, you guys were worried about pandering. Shouldn't he be like 50% of the black vote now?
Yeah.
So that's a lot of Twitter is an echo chamber, and you just have to like throw away all that,
because
it's not really reflective of the actual political climate. Because on Twitter, everyone's like, "Yo, Joe Biden is a monster. We gotta get Joe Biden out the paint." You do a poll off of Twitter, people like, yo, Joe's my guy. Joe will probably be the Democratic front runner. Mm-hmm. And Twitter's just like, yo, he's canceled. I'm like, ask your aunt. She voted for him.
Yeah. Are you worried about him getting canceled and then becoming the nominee?
I don't think he could be canceled.
Yeah.
I think Joe's staying power is too strong. Also, he has the Obama card.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was going to say the proximity to Obama.
He's like, as my friend Barack told me. It's like, oh,
I learned so many things from my friend Barack Obama. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. You think that'll work? It's working. As a strategy?
It's working.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's working. Yeah, 100%. Because there's also, he's going to get a lot of the black vote just from older black people remembering him being next to Obama for no other reason. Mm-hmm. So he's going to cruise on that.
Coming up, Desus and Mero reveal how they ended up in a bizarre Twitter feud with Taylor Swift fans. The Last Laugh is brought to you by Purple Mattress. Sleep is important. The quality of your sleep affects the quality of your daily life. That's something I definitely know. If I don't get a good night's sleep, I cannot do this podcast with as many comedians as I've been doing over the last few weeks. How is Purple different from other mattresses? The Purple mattress will probably feel different than anything you've ever experienced because it uses this brand new material that was developed by an actual rocket scientist. It is not at all like the memory foam you might be used to. The Purple material feels very unique because it's both firm and soft at the same time, so it keeps everything supported while still feeling really comfortable. Plus, it's breathable, so it sleeps cool. Why should you try a Purple mattress? They offer a 100-night risk-free trial. So if you're not fully satisfied, you can return your mattress for a full refund. It's backed by a 10-year warranty, has free shipping and returns, and free in-home setup and old mattress removal. You're gonna love Purple. And right now, my listeners will get a free Purple pillow with the purchase of a mattress. That's in addition to the great free gifts they're already offering site-wide. Just text LAUGH to 84888. The only way to get this free pillow is to text LAUGH to 84888. That's LAUGH to 84888. Message and data rates may apply. Speaking of being canceled, have you guys had to deal with anything like that where people have kind of come after you for something you said, or is that kind of not something you've had to deal with?
We had a little run-in with Taylor Swift's groupies, the Swifties. But we have, shout out to our group, the Bodega Hive, that went to war for us. And also, the thing about it's, there's certain levels of getting canceled. This is getting canceled for actually being canceled. And also the whole idea of getting, who actually has been canceled? The only person that's ever really been canceled is who? Michael Jackson. Why? Right. He got canceled by life.
Got canceled. Fentanyl canceled.
And even he might not be canceled. Right. Because people still listen to the music.
He's still listening to music. So everyone's like, I don't want to get canceled. A lot of people got canceled and just laid low for a couple months and just came back. Mm-hmm. And so even with the Taylor Swift thing, we were on Jimmy Fallon. We made a quick joke because he always refers to Taylor Swift having a long back. We're playing a match game. The clue is Taylor Swift. Mm-hmm. So I say long back. We immediately get it. Jimmy Fallon's like, yo, what happened? It's a hilarious clip.
She has a very long back.
Taylor Swift. All of her like 15-year-old fans are like, you're body shaming Taylor Swift.
So you should die.
So their answer to us body shaming Taylor Swift is death threats and calling us racial slurs.
Oh my God.
But because we know it's the internet and though we're dealing with 15-year-olds, I know it's 3 days. It's going to take three. They have the attention span for three days.
You weren't that worried.
I wasn't worried at all.
No.
And then also, if you start replying to them, they freak out. Because I had people and they was like, I'm going to kill you. You better get more security at Showtime. And I was like, I will beat you up. Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh, I'm sorry. You don't understand, like, Taylor Swift, like, she came on Jimmy Fallon's show when his mother died, and, like, how could he, like, let you guys do it? Just please apologize to her, man. And I'm like, oh, I was like, oh, you're 13. I was like, oh, these aren't real threats. Like, you guys are a kid.
The FBI called my house.
Really?
Yeah, and we're like, well, actually, they called my local precinct because somebody had said, send me a message saying, like, I know you have four kids and I know where they go to school.
Oh, shit.
And I screen grabbed it and I was like, I wish you would, motherfucker. Come to my house. I got a rusty machete in the garage waiting for you.
They put a bounty on our head. A pop socket. I didn't even know what a pop socket was. It's the little thing on the back of the phone.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, that's $8. I will buy all of you pop sockets. What kind of bounty is that? Put some respect on my name.
The bounty was a
they
pop socket.
They didn't even go hard. Yeah. And it was like, yo, whoever leaves the meanest comment gets a free pop socket. And they were like, you're a stinky butthead.
Yeah, someone was like, I hope you lick a toilet and die. And then they screenshot it and put it on the pop socket thing. It was like, did I win it? And I was like, for that week? That's very weak. Come on. Like, lick a toilet and die?
Go harder.
Yeah, but that's also, you're like, oh, you know what? If I was in junior high school, these would be harsh.
Yeah.
These would, it was
I
like,
would probably believe.
They're the kind of insults that someone like delivers and goes like this, like,
right.
Take that.
Yeah.
Megan, you're canceled.
Uh-huh.
They won't let us sit at, we're like our lunch tray at the table and they won't let us sit down.
So wait, what happened with the FBI?
So it was a laughing stock, actually, because I actually called the agent and he literally laughed. He chuckled. He was like, yeah, we got a bunch of this stuff. I got a bunch of this shit coming across my desk every day. Mm-hmm. He's like, I just bumped it down to local PD because it's not an imminent threat. Yeah. It's not a real threat.
Yeah.
Blah, 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 blah. Do you have a home security system? Yeah. I was like, yeah, you're fine. You got nothing to worry about.
It was funny. They were lighting up our social media, but they were also lighting up Jimmy Fallon's social media.
Mm.
And last time I spoke to him, I was like, yeah, that Taylor Swift stuff was wild. He was like, what?
What are you talking about?
He didn't know.
I was like, what? He was like, what? He was like, I don't check that. I don't give a shit about that. Like,
he probably gets all kinds of stuff.
He gets all types of weird shit.
He just ignores it all. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is the kind of stuff though that comes with you guys. You know, your profile keeps rising.
Yeah.
You know, how do you feel about that? The fame aspect of it.
It's cool, but you know what the thing is? Because I think the fact that if it has come to us in our early 20s, we wouldn't know how to handle it. One of us would probably be dead from a cocaine overdose already. But because we've lived real lives, we've had real jobs, we've had real struggle. It's just like, this is such a dream position that even the worst part of it is still better than the best parts of our old lives.
Yeah.
So you just take it in stride. And it's just like, wow, I got Taylor Swift's fans trying to kill me. I'm like, I have Taylor Swift's fans trying to kill me. Yeah. That's kind of cool.
Who cares? I had Julio trying to kill me in 2004 for real.
Yeah.
And he wasn't kidding.
Yeah.
And he had a lot more than pop socket riding on it.
Yeah. And you feel like you can also appreciate the good parts of it more than
good,
you would have.
The good parts are amazing. The good parts, like, you'll have moments where you, like, yesterday we were at dinner with Jay Ellis, Anna Kendrick, like, all our and these aren't just random people. These are our friends, like, people we can text message. Mm-hmm. And I'm just sitting around, and, like, we're at the table, and every other table is just, like, looking at us, and, like, that's just and I'm like, this is kind of cool.
Yeah,
like I'm not mad at this.
Yeah, I wonder if there's a level of it that would get to be too much. Or
I think anytime you reach the point where you can't go out in public anymore, that's when it's scary. Mm. But New York is so forgiving that like New Yorkers generally leave people alone.
What about in the Bronx? What happens when you walk around?
Oh, if we get it in the Bronx, people are just like, yo, thank you for repping the Bronx. Like old people come up and they're shaking. They're like, I've lived in the Bronx since the 1950s. I've never seen they tear up because they're like, no one has been as proud to be from the Bronx as you and Meryl. Every time you open your mouth, you mention you're from the Bronx. Everywhere you go, you represent the Bronx, and you have such civic pride in the Bronx that no one has had in quite some time. Yeah. And it's just like, that's the best feeling in the world. Are people just like I walk past the PJs and they're like, yo, keep doing your thing. I'm so proud of you. And it's just like people you don't know, and they come, they're like, yo, you and Meryl are like the sons we never had. And like, they tear up. They're like, yo, so you guys came from nothing, and I know I can make it too because you guys made it. And you're just like, yo, we're just making a show. And it's resonating with people on such a higher level that you didn't even realize. It's like the best feeling in the world.
Yeah. I got kids that I taught in like 10 years ago that are adults now and come back and are like, yo, I saw you on TV. I was like, yo, man, you like, I'm doing this now, I'm doing that now. And it'll be a kid that I was just like, man, this kid is not going in the right direction. And then I'm like, he's like, yo, you helped me do this and that, and you showed me that, like, you know, I can be me. And pursue like whatever creative endeavor I want, you know what I'm saying? Like, but my message to them was always like, you know, always with that first generation mentality of like, always have a backup plan. Pursue your dreams, but always have a backup plan. And that was like, always, I would always tell them that. And kids would come back and be like, you know, I'm like a community organizer now, and I do this and I do that, and I'm married and I have two kids, and we're doing great. And I'm like, man, I remember when you were in the seventh grade, like, you were fucking up. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, bad.
Yeah, the backup plan thing is funny because I've heard people tell it both ways. One is, like, have a backup plan. The other one is, don't have a backup plan because you'll fall back on it.
Yeah. No backup plans over here. I've literally had, like, at least 52 different jobs in my life because I've never been hesitant to just, like, walk the fuck off a job. Because my whole life I've always been like, I'm better than this. And not on a conceited kind of, like, I'm too good to do this work, but I was like, I'm too smart and I have too much talent and this is not what I'm supposed to be doing. So that's always, like, that's the one thing about this podcast and this whole thing. It's just, like, when I left my office job, I was like, yo, even if it doesn't work out, at least I know I tried. Because nothing's worse than not trying and just always having that lingering in your back of your mind, like, what could have been? What if I had done that? And my life, I'm just like, yo, just if the opportunity is there, take it. And so I've never had a plan. There's no plan B. Mm-hmm. There's no, like, I actually, there's a joke about that I always say to my boys, because in New York, you're always like, yo, what's up, B? What's up, B? And I'm like, yo, no plan, B.
So looking forward, I mean, you guys have been doing this show on Showtime for like 6 months. You're going to come back in September. What do you want to achieve with the show next? What new things do you want to do? What's exciting you about this next phase of the show?
Just keep getting the reps in and getting to that place where we're like, we are 1,000% happy with this show. Cause like, I'm a perfectionist. Like I go home and I watch the show, like not, I laugh, but I watch it as like a game film. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, I did this, and I kind of mumbled that line, or I could have said this instead of that, or you know, et cetera, et cetera. And it's just a product of being an off the cuff type of person. You know what I mean? You go back and you're like, oh, well, next time I'll do this. You know what I'm saying? But just like I enjoy it, but you know it's.
You know, what I want for the show is, like, I know we bring something very unique to late night, and I just want to keep doing it and make people realize what exactly we're bringing to late night. Because that's the thing. The show, I'm very happy with the show. I'm very proud of the show. If the show ends tomorrow, I can stand by what we've put out. Mm-hmm. And I'll be like, yo, that's some of the best television ever made, because it's so unique and it was so daring and bold and it broke so many rules. And I was like, I just want the show to reach a level where it's as critically acclaimed as it should be. Like, every now and then I'll see an article and they're like, here's the late night takes on this topic. Mm-hmm. And they do all the other shows and they don't do us. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, the hell? We're a real late night show. We're on a real network. Mm-hmm. So it's just making people recognize that we're out there. And it's not a matter of we're getting snubbed. It's just like, yes, due to marketing, like, people know about the show, but a lot of people don't know about the show. And I want those people to find out about it, because nothing's better than people who are just like, yo, I just found your show, bro. I've been missing out. Or people just like, yo, I just found you last week. Yo, you have the best show ever. And like that joy people get, I just want to keep pushing that and just putting it out there for people, because we're doing a service. People love watching a show late at night and they love our humor and our comedy. I just want to keep doing that and just keep making people laugh for as many seasons as we can.
Mm-hmm. So what I want to do before we end is a little bit of a speed round, kind of looking back at this first 6 months of the show.
Okay.
So you can each kind of answer the questions. So I guess first is, what's been the best part about making the show so far?
Having creative control, having like the autonomy to say like, no, we don't want that guest, or no, we don't want to do that piece, or, you know, yeah, we want to do this, but we want to do it this way. You know what I'm saying? And then having that like control over the process, where if we're not satisfied with what's coming out or what we're about to put out, we can scrap it and go right back to the drawing board. Mm. Whereas, like, you know, previously we didn't have that like level of control, where it was like, this is exactly what we want to put out, and this is how we want to put it out.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And that's, as an art, as a creative, that's like the most freeing, greatest thing that you can have.
What's the hardest part about making the show so far?
I think the hardest part about making the show is like, sometimes every now, because the show is Monday and Thursday, but every now and then like a story will fall weirdly in between and you can't discuss it. So that's like there's stories you want to touch on and you can't, and that's like not really a bad thing, because we'll always have enough stories. Mm-hmm. But in my mind, I would love to like do the show for like 4 hours and just talk on everything that happens on the internet. That's not possible. But you know, like every now and then you'll miss a story. You're like, oh, we could have done that. But other than that, the show's a breeze to make.
Yeah. Do you feel like there's a chance it could go to 4 nights a week, 5 nights a week?
Or? I mean, if Showtime wants to drive an armored truck up to our house. Actually, I don't.
It's a lot of work.
It's a lot of work. But
yeah, no, it is. And that's the thing. Like people, it's funny because people are like, well, you guys have so much free time on your hands now that you're only twice a week. Before you were 4 times. I was like, guys, you have no idea the level of production that goes into this show.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like literally everything. Like you said, like it's a union show. So yeah, everything like, from the set.
We just shot a sketch on like the Wednesday before we left. And we were on set from 8 to 8.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's just, and then it's like you do that, and then the sketch might be like 3 to 4 minutes long. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, but people don't realize that. So they see, they're like, oh, it took you 4 minutes to film that sketch. Yeah. It's like, no,
it didn't.
Buddy.
It took us 4 minutes to get out of the trailer to set up a shot.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And then there's so much minutia that goes on behind the scenes that people don't realize. So they're like, we want you on 6-7 days a week. And I'd be like, okay, cool. I'll just disavow my family.
Yeah.
And we'll just like stay in the studio 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
So for each of you, who's been the most fun guest that you've had on so far?
Most fun guest we've had? Probably Andy and Andy. Yeah. They that was just so much fun.
Yeah, that was fun. That was fun.
And then it was fun and messy.
Yeah. And it was fun to see Anderson Cooper in a different light. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because he's always very serious, like Anchorman. Like, you know, like this dude has been in fucking war zones, you know what I mean? Like reporting live, and like now he's sitting at a table with us cracking
But that's
jokes.
Also always funny about the guests, like getting them out of their element and showing like having Bill Hader like just like cursing or willy-nilly or Don Cheadle just cursing, and like that people love to see that because
Anna Kendrick, Anna Kendrick was great.
She's the homie, and just having her around the Bronx and like her timing is so great. That's like everyone down the show is like, it's not like their PR person was like, can this person be on the show? It's like, yo, we meet them. It's like, yo, you got a good energy. We got a good, like, come on the show. There's no one on the show because we're being forced to have them on the show. Yeah. And that's what, like, every interview has, like, a special part of it. But that's the best part, just hanging with the people. And, you know, it's like, it doesn't feel like an interview. And, like, the people are really just hanging out with us.
What was the most challenging interview guest that you had on?
Dasha Polanco.
Yeah,
because apparently, like, there's no subtitles, and no one wants to tell me what the hell these two is yapping about.
They had a whole
separate sideshow in Spanish over here. I'm just sitting
there
like,
that's not fair.
I have my phone out under the table downloading Duolingo. I was like, all right, slow down.
No, but I've known her for a long time. Like, her and my wife are friends, like, you know, and she's just like, you know, we relate on like that, like she's like my cousin, you know what I mean? Like we relate so on that level that it's just like, it was so natural, you know what I mean? And like, it's funny, it's right, because it's like, it ended up being like, we're like, laughing about very like, very specific like Dominican things, like, you know what I mean? Like spaghetti on the beach and all that type of stuff. And, but you know, it was just like, when you have a personal relationship with somebody, like you can tell, like it comes out in the interview. You know what I mean? So
yeah. So did you have a guest that was difficult for you for the opposite reason, or
I don't, not difficult. It's just like sometimes you want to get more out of a person, you don't, and you don't get exactly what you wanted out of them. But I can't say that I've encountered anybody difficult. Like, oh, God, this is terrible. I can't. Hurry up and get this over with. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Who's the number one dream guest for each of you for the future of the show?
Probably Barack Obama would be great, or Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. You know Donald Trump would say some wild shit.
Yeah, he'll say something so wild. At this point, it's funny because it's like, no matter what he says, he's fine. He's like Teflon. Yeah. But like, just to see him, like, his self-awareness is zero. So just to see him, like us, like, you know, like the hyenas in the Lion King, like it's like waiting for him to like say something astronomically dumb would be hilarious.
Yeah, it's interesting. A lot of I've asked a few different late night hosts like whether they would have him on, when they did have him on, do they regret it, that kind of thing. And I think there's a wide variety. Some people are like, oh yeah, of course, if he would come on my show, I would have him on a second. And some people are like, I don't know if I would have him. And obviously, Jimmy Fallon had some controversy over having him on.
It depends how you do it, because it's like, are you having him on to normalize him, or are you on him? Are you going to be critical of him? Because I think the problem was people had him on in like a cuddly, you know, kind of like he's like a harmless uncle. Remember he was on like a SNL? He hosted SNL.
Yeah, yeah.
He was dancing the Hotline Bling, and he was like, oh,
yeah, like fast making forward. It into a joke.
Yeah, and it wasn't a joke.
So the way we end every episode is I ask guests, what's the last thing that made you laugh really hard?
The last thing that made me laugh really hard. Let me see.
There was this random tweet, and it was just like, you know when people on Twitter take things out of context, like two or three word phrases out of context and apply it to like a reaction? There was like a reaction to, you know, Logic has that like very serious song about like suicide and like mental health issues or whatever. And the Giants drafted Daniel Jones at quarterback. And some dude just posted that, like, the Giants drafted Daniel Jones at quarterback. And it was just the clip of Logic being like, I don't want to be alive. And I was just like, I don't know why. That shit had me in tears for like 2 hours.
What about you?
I cracked up about, shout out to my, I have a 10-month-old Boston Terrier puppy named Mac, and he's at home, you know, shout out to him with the dog sitter. He doesn't know how to jump on the bed properly, because he's like, he's still a baby. So I was playing fetch with him, and I threw the Wubba, this toy you throw around, and he tried to come at it at like an angle, and he hit the side of the bed, and just like completely lost his shit, and wiped out on the floor, And it was like, it's cute because he's a puppy. And he like looked around to see if like, he was like stunned. He didn't know what was going on. But I was like, wow, you dumb as shit, boy.
You didn't get it on video?
I didn't get it on video. I was reaching for the phone, but yeah. I was like, wow. And then I threw it and he did it again. And I was like, this is pretty hilarious. This is cute and adorable. So shout out to Mac. I miss you, buddy.
All right. Thank you guys so much for doing this.
Thank you.
Thank you so much to Desus Nice and the Kid Mero for coming into our LA studio during their month off. Desus and Mero returns to Showtime on Thursday, September 12th. You can catch up on all the best clips you may have missed on their YouTube channel right now. And don't forget to subscribe to the Bodega Boys podcast wherever you get your podcasts. If you enjoy this show, please tell your friends and give us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. You can find me on Twitter at Matt Wilstein and at thedailybeast.com. The Last Laugh is distributed by Himalaya Media for The Daily Beast. It is produced by Jason Smith and Scott Porch for Starburns Audio and edited by Mackenzie Mazzell. Our theme music is by Claude, who you can find on Instagram at claude.mp3. You can find the show every week on Apple Podcasts, the Himalaya app, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And you can find show notes and highlights from each episode on thedailybeast.com. See you next week.